Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast, presented by the Indiana Corn Growers Association and the Indiana Soybean Alliance, with support from Indiana Farm Bureau. And glad to be joined by the director of the Indiana State Department of Agriculture, Don Lamb, on today's podcast. Don, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate the time, and congratulations on your appointment to continue filling that role as director of the Indiana State Department of Agriculture.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. It's been an honor to serve so far, and I'm anxious to get a chance to keep going here, and looking forward to it. So change is sometimes hard, but it's also good. So I'm looking forward to some time with the new administration.
And for those that missed the news this past week, Governor-elect Mike Braun and Lieutenant Governor-elect Micah Beckwith made the decision to keep Don in this role. So, it was kind of an interesting situation, Don, that you got to kind of come into with, March of 23, you came into the role succeeding Bruce Kettler as the State Department of Ag Director, and kind of a lame duck role, if you will, not knowing what exactly was going to happen with the election, knowing that Governor Holcomb was not going to be able to run for re-election. We knew that there was a cutoff date to the Holcomb administration, and my goodness, we didn't know at the time that there were going to be so many names in that Republican primary. I think that, and again, this is Eric Pfeiffer, host of this podcast, speaking, not the sponsors, not Don Lamb, but I think we could probably take a pretty good guess that it was going to be a Republican governor taking over. But with all of those different names in that Republican primary, who knew what was going to happen to the cabinet, to any of the sub-level things? So many different things could have happened. But you get to stick around and you get to do this, and we discussed this a little bit in our interview the other day, but to kind of recap here, Don, I mean, you get to kind of come in with a fresh perspective here. You've had the chance to do this for the past year and a half plus. You've got some perspective in the role, but you've got an administration now to go through to institute some real ideas, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I think maybe it's a good thing. Maybe I'm fortunate that I don't think very politically sometimes. So when you talk about when I came into this role, I'll be real honest with you. The fact that it was maybe a shorter commitment than the most was a good thing for me, because I really had never been in this world before. I didn't know if I would really, how I would like it, what it would be like. I love farming and I loved where I was at. So the idea that it was a shortened role potentially wasn't a bad thing for me. It was a good thing, and so it gave me a timeline to work in. And then as it's gone on, I have really enjoyed it personally as far as that goes, mostly because of the people that I get to work with in Indiana agriculture. But also it does take you a certain amount of time just to get your feet under you, to learn, how things work, who, if you're going to play this game, where do you need to go? And so I feel like I am much better equipped now than I was. And that makes me excited. Like you say, we've kind of got a fresh page to look at right now. And we've got ideas of what we'd like to see different. And I've really appreciated, as I told you before, I've really appreciated the Holcomb Crouch administration, and it's been really good working with them, and they're the ones that gave me the opportunity to be here, so I'm thankful to them. But just like, if there's a change of a coach on a team, it's exciting just to have a new perspective. And right now I think that's where we're at. We've got a new perspective and a new chance to do some things, and I think agriculture really needs to take advantage of that right now.
Let's take a step back here to March 23. How did this come about, Don? If you can kind of, just take us back to that moment. We know that Bruce Kettler stepped away. He was in that role, and it's interesting. Bruce and I go back. I go back to when I started with Hoosier Ag Today. I went to an event, and Andy Eubank it was my first week. He was supposed to go with me to that event and kind of, introduce me to some folks. And I go and I set my stuff down, and Bruce is sitting in front of me, and I've never met him before. And he had just started the week before I started. And he says, hey, I'm Bruce Keller. And I'm like, I feel like I should know who that is. And I'm sure enough. Yeah. He's, you know, in your role. So he and I started right at about the same time. And then we know he went on to be, the executive director of the Agribusiness Council of Indiana. So, you know, how did this start for you? How did this all come about that you got in this role of ISDA director?
Yeah. Well, and I'll start with talking a little bit about Bruce, because I think Bruce did a really good job while he was here. And when I was able to come in, you know, it was obvious that things were in good shape. And I didn't come in taking over something that was a problem. I came in taking over something that was really rolling pretty well. And, you know, Jordan Sager at the time was deputy director. And so he'd kind of taken the reins while Bruce was out in that time before I started. But I just have to give a lot of credit to Bruce and then Jordan and then Katie Nelson, who's now the deputy director, but was real involved in policy at the time. Like I say, when I came in, this was an organization that was already working well. So I didn't have to fix a lot of things, didn't have to fill a lot of holes or anything like that. So that was great. And for me, you know, I think, you know, the ag community in the state is strong. And when that role became opened, I think there was some push, and I would say, you know, probably mostly from Farm Bureau and corn and soy, but hey, could we put a farmer in this role? You know, let's think about actually putting a farmer in this role. It's not something that had happened very often. And I think, you know, the lieutenant governor at the time, Suzanne Crouch, said, okay, who, you know, I'm willing to do that, but you got to give me some names and some thoughts. So I really think that my name was put in more through some of the ag organizations and as a possibility. And I think there were some others, but I think there was just a desire to have a farmer in the role. And when you think about that, it's kind of unique, because how does a farmer do this? You know, if I didn't have the situation I'm in, where I have a brother and some nephews that really could pick up the reins and keep going. You know, it's kind of rare that somebody could be a full-time farmer and consider, you know, taking away time from the farm, because this is very much a full-time job. That was, you know, one of the first questions is, is this something I can do, you know, 2 or 3 days a week? No, it's a full-time job. And it really is. You can't live in both worlds. So anyway, it's a unique opportunity for a farmer to be able to do what I've been able to do.
It's very unique. And I think that it's got some people from outside of Indiana kind of looking at it like, yeah, that's pretty neat. I've spoken with some folks outside of Indiana, like, yeah, having a farmer in that position is pretty unique and pretty cool. So I think that a lot of that is pretty neat. You know, we talked about Bruce. We know that, you know, prior to Bruce, it was Ted McKinney in that role. There was one evening just, you know, the night before the state fair that the three of you were all in the same room there in the glass barn, there at the state fairgrounds. And, it was just kind of neat for me to be able to be in the same conversation with the three of you. And it's just, you know, there's gotta be a level of support there, you know, especially with Ted being CEO of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture and Bruce still being in the Indiana ag community. I imagine that there's a lot of that. And you talk frequently about Team Ag Indiana, and you know, Bruce still being a part of that. Ted, maybe he's that weird uncle that's still part of Team Ag Indiana. He's out in D.C., but he's still in Team Ag Indiana in a way. There's a lot of support that goes into this that you still have, right?
And if the weird uncle comment,
Ted,
that's good. I like that. He'll appreciate that. You are so right. With both of those guys, it's really been special to have that relationship. Bruce and I still get breakfast every month together. We did it just this past Friday, and it's really, really good for me, because there's not too many people that, you know, you can say, well, okay, Bruce, you know how this is. And he says, yeah, I know how this is. And so what do you think I ought to do in this situation? And really, we'd get to bounce those ideas off each other. And then the other side of that is Agribusiness Council of Indiana, you know, how can the State Department of Ag help them accomplish their goals too? So it really goes both ways, where Bruce helps me a lot in my role, and then hopefully the Department of Ag is stronger for the members of the Agribusiness Council of Indiana and the industry of agriculture across our state because of that relationship. So that's been really good. And then you're right, Ted is really one of the first guys I call whenever there's something big. You know, if I really have to think through something, you know, he's going to be the first guy I call and say, what do you think of this? And because he's got the experience here. But then the other side of that is I think people in Indiana agriculture really need to appreciate Ted because of where he's at. We have a really big influence at that federal level, much, much bigger than we would if it were just anybody else from wherever being the CEO of NASDA. Ted has a heart for Indiana, so he always makes sure that we're in the know. He always makes sure that we get to be at the forefront of ideas and thoughts. And so it's a good thing. Not that he, you know, if anybody from other states are listening, Ted doesn't give us any unfair advantage, but he's from Indiana. So he knows where we are. He knows who the players are here in the state. And that's just it's a great advantage for Indiana agriculture.
And for those listening right now, we are speaking here on Monday morning, the 23rd. I'm sure that folks, instead of Christmas music, they're tuning into this, Don. That's what they've got going on around their yeah. Christmas morning right now. But our CJ Miller is going to be chatting with Ted here in just a little while because we had some kind of breaking news here over the weekend. And we're going to touch on this just a little bit here, Don, with this GMO dispute that we've been battling for quite some time. And this really fits into the policy realm here mm-hmm. with the previous president of Mexico really kind of trying to it's been a mystery for a while what's been going on there with them trying to ban GMO corn from the United mm-hmm. States. Mexico being our number one customer both in Indiana and across the United States for corn, and he wanted to just ban GM corn. And I know speaking mm-hmm. with Ted about this, and he's got a very unique perspective with his previous role as Undersecretary of Trade and Foreign Agricultural Affairs. This one just didn't make any sense to him from the get-go. So CJ's going to be chatting with him about this in just a little while. But from our conversation that you and I had the other day, that you know ISDA with this new administration and what you have as a vision for ISDA moving forward here in 25. 26, as long as you stay in the role here, mm-hmm. there's going to be a keen focus on economic development. And a big part of that has to be trade and mm-hmm. ag exports. And a big part of that has to be Mexico, right? I mean, you've been there.
Yep. Yeah. No, you're exactly right. We right now about 20% of our farm products are exported. So if you just imagine taking that away, what that would do to our markets. And we're fighting low commodity prices right now. And it's a tough time in agriculture right now, but I can't even imagine what it would be like if we really were hurt in our export markets as well. So it is super important for us to keep those relationships good. And you're right, Mexico and Canada, you know, sometimes you look at it and you think about trade, you think, well, you know, it's not too sexy to go to, you know, Mexico and Canada. They're our neighbors, and you almost take them for granted. Like, okay, they're right here, but we can't take them for granted. They are extremely important. They are our biggest trade customers, and so you know, really, this whole North American area, if we can be more of a team all the time, that's a better thing. And not just the U.S. versus and Mexico and Canada, but think of us together too as we deal with the rest of the world. And right now, you know, of course, we've got challenges with China. And you know, my whole life, China's been, you know, our biggest, you know, customer and been such a big part of what we do. And the reality is that's changing. The reality is that it's tough dealing with China, and we need to have other markets developed. So yes, Mexico and Canada are super important. And then things like I went to Morocco here recently, you know, and you think about Northern Africa, and that's a world that we really hadn't paid a lot of attention to before so much. But by 2050, 25% of the world will live on the continent of Africa. And that's just a fact. Those are just the numbers. It's not we know by the way the population is changing, that's what it's going to be. So we've got to be fostering that relationship. You know, we have to, so, you know, things like that, we're looking forward. You may be looking out 10, 15, 20 years, But if you don't do that now, you won't have that market when that time comes.
You know, something that, you and I share here, Don, is a great appreciation for our Agra Institute leadership program that that I'm in currently, and you are a graduate of, and our international trip that we get to take in 2026 will be to Africa. So that's something that I'm looking forward to. That'll be a fantastic trip, and I'm looking forward to learning more about all of right. that's involved in that. And one of the folks in my class, Andrew Sherman, on your team there at ISDA, mm-hmm. That's kind of his gig, right? To really get out there and explore those markets and see what he can do for Indiana in the international space.
Right. And it's so important to have somebody like Andrew, because he knows the information, he knows the statistics. You know, when I can ask him about almost any country, and he says, well, you know, we sell a lot of this to them, and here's the challenge, you know, and Andrew just lives that world, and he knows it real well. So, I am very fortunate to have Andrew on our team. He's funny, you know, I'm getting old and Andrew's young, but we've done a lot of traveling together. And when we travel, I call him Dad. You know, because he kind of takes care of me. He's like, okay, I need to exchange some money, Dad. What do I do here? And he helps me, and so we get to reverse roles a little bit when we travel, and we have a really good time together. But I'm really proud of him, because I can put him in front of any group, if it's local here and we're talking about trade, or if we're in a foreign country, and I know he's going to represent exactly the facts of Indiana agriculture and what we can do, and he does a terrific job with that. And I'll back up real quick, because you mentioned ag leadership, and just throw that plug in there for that program. Yes, I am a huge fan of the ag leadership program, Beth Archer and all that she does. And I would just say to anybody listening, you know, if you want to take a step in leadership, check that out, because it's a program that really changed my life. And it's changed an awful lot of people's lives. So big plug for ag leadership.
It's changing mine right now. It's mm-hmm. it's a fantastic program. I'm not even halfway through it. It's unbelievable what we've mm-hmm. been able to do already. I'm a huge advocate already. It's tremendous. So if you've got questions, there are plenty of people across the ALP network that would absolutely love to chat with you about it. If you're interested at all, we've got farmers in there. We've got people all across the ag industry that have gone through this program and are going through it currently. It's tremendous. And that's great to know about Andrew. I'll be calling him Dad all through our international travels. It's wonderful. Another focus of economic development, Don, as we talk through this, we've talked about international trade. We need to look at the other side of the coin here. One of the things when I first started with Hoosier Ag Today, one of the very first programs through the Indiana State Department of Agriculture that I was really exposed to was the Indiana Grown program. And this mm-hmm. program has always been really interesting to me. And I feel like it's kind of taken on a life of its own. It's grown, no pun intended, it has grown mm-hmm. so much so fast. Mm-hmm. I guess a couple of things. One, can you go into more detail about the program for some farmers that may not be as familiar with it as what I am? Because again, I love the program. I think it does amazing things. But two, and I know it's a government program, so this could be said of mm-hmm. all of them, but at this point, with its rapid growth, is it maybe even underfunded at this point? Do we need to find some different ways to really, again, grow this some more?
Yeah. Right. Well, the Indiana Grown program has been great. Caroline Patrick has been in the leadership role of that ever since I've been here. So I've known no other leader of it. And ever since I've been here, like you say, it's just been growing. So I give her a lot of credit, her team, for putting that together. And it's a membership program, but it doesn't cost anything. It's something that truly, you know, the old saying, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. Well, I think this is one of those cases where we do, you know, the state legislature funds this, and we get to help people without having a cost to that membership. And then when you're a member of Indiana Grown, you get newsletters, you get chances for education, you get chances for food safety training, anything that you want to know about. I'm gonna grow my product here on my farm. It may be a meat product, it may be honey, it may be flowers, a wide range of things that could be done locally. And I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to get to the next level. And the Indiana Grown folks are there to kind of help you know how to get to that next level and how to grow your sales. And it's so interesting because you're right. We talk about, international trade, and that's the big world, a commodity, corn and soybeans and beef and poultry and pork and all the different things that we trade. And that has to do a lot with national security. It is food security is national security. You hear that a lot. And it's true. I can see it when I think about these other geopolitical areas such as South Korea and North Korea. It's important for us to have that relationship. Well, then you take it back. You've got this big part that's all about security, and then you take it down to a local level, and food security is still security. And part of that relates to the fact that if you have a food desert, if you have areas where food is not available or people that can't afford food, then violent crime is definitely at a higher level in those areas. So you still get this security question that's connected to food, whether it's local or international. And I would say that the Indiana Grown program helps with that because it gives us opportunities to put local food in the hands of local people who need it. It's not a charity program at all, but you start to think about how can this market work where we've got food right here and we need food right here, and how do we economically get that hole filled? And it's a challenge because you're growing a premium product a lot of times. You're growing a product that really would fetch a high price at a farmer's market, but you're also trying to help people who maybe live in poverty, and how do you get the extra food or leftover food or whatever it is into those markets. And so that whole world is super interesting. It's very complex, but it's exciting because I think there's some really good substance happening in that world, and it's becoming realistic that we're improving that part of how we eat.
Yeah, and again, it's grown so much. I mean, this program isn't that old. The Indiana Grown program. I don't know exactly when it started, but it's not much older than what my tenure is with Hoosier Ag today, and it's right. Got a ton of members at this point. Yeah. Is it underfunded at this point, Don?
Yeah, and thanks for bringing that back up because the thing that we really need the most, if Indiana Grown is going to get to the next level and another level higher, it really is going to be because people recognize that brand as something that they want. And to do that, you almost have to have some sort of advertising. There needs to be something where the average consumer in Indiana says, hey, I want an Indiana Grown product. I want to be looking for that Indiana Grown product. If that label's on something, then I know it's quality and I would like to buy that. And that's what helps those local folks. If you can turn local food dollars over, it makes a big difference in a community. So the fact that we raise something locally, we process something locally, we sell something locally, those dollars turn over something like 7 times in a local economy. And so it's good for all of us to do that. But unless a consumer recognizes it, they don't know to go for that. So when I think about it being underfunded, I would say that one of the biggest areas is if we can do something on the advertising realm to make that brand more well known across the state, that would really help.
You can walk into your local grocery store. I go into my local Payless store here in West Lafayette, which is a Kroger brand store. Right there at the front, there is a little stand, Indiana Grown. Mm-hmm. It's right there. It's a little round thing, Indiana Grown. And you can find those products. Right. It is just a matter of knowing what it is you're looking for. And folks, I mean, it says it right on there, Indiana Grown, and people should be able to be like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. But unless you know what you're looking for, it can make it a little difficult.
And then the big challenge that many local producers have is how do you take something to scale? How do you do a very good job of producing this product But a lot of times it might be done on a fairly small scale, maybe right on a farm. Well, how do you get that to a level where you could actually get a contract with a grocery store to have it across several stores or across the whole state? And that takes a whole nother level of whether it's transportation, whether it's cold storage, whether it's packing, processing. You know, how do you do that? And that's the biggest challenge that it seems to me like we're trying to fill right now is taking local products and making them, because you got to be competitively priced. You know, yes, you want local, but it can't be twice the money. It's got to be something that can be efficiently produced in a way that consumers can afford to buy it. And so it's there's the challenge, but there's also the opportunity.
And Indiana Grown is also kind of taking on this task of, you know, not just grocery stores, but also trying to get it into schools and mm-hmm. and is it hospitals as well? I mean, trying to get it mm-hmm. into different places here that again these local farms, they're not necessarily equipped to do. I mean, we talk about labor being an issue. I mean, you've got a farm, Don. Do you have the resources on your farm to grow this stuff and then send someone out to try to get it into a school, a hospital, or anything else? I mean, that's not really what you're equipped to do, right?
Right. No, labor is always a part of that, and it's always a challenge. And one thing I would say that we do in Indiana pretty well, but we can also improve on, is the relationships that we have across the state. When I hear you say what you're saying, the Indiana Department of Health actually has something to do with that as well. When we think about food distribution, we think about food as health, and food as medicine, but then the Indiana Department of Health also has programs that would help to encourage that. And so in some ways, our Indiana Grown program is working in tandem with the Department of Health. And of course, the Department of Health has departments all in every county, so they can promote things that way across the state. And so when we think about getting it into institutions, getting it into schools, there's programs there that would help to do that. But we need to collaborate with the Department of Health. We need to collaborate with other state government agencies to see if we can make that happen. And so those are areas, again, challenges and opportunities that we can make better in the next 4 years.
And with that, I want to take a break, because I think that there are some changes that are happening with the Braun-Beckwith administration that folks have some questions about. Maybe you can answer some of them. The cabinet is changing and realigning a little bit. And I think just from a communication standpoint, maybe you can answer just a couple of those and how ISDA can collaborate with some of those other organizations a little bit. Don Lamb is our guest here on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast, and we'll come back here in just a few moments. The Indiana Ag Policy Podcast is brought to you by the Indiana Corn Growers Association, the Indiana Soybean Alliance, and also Indiana Farm Bureau.
There is strength in numbers. That's why the Indiana Soybean Alliance membership and policy and Indiana Corn Growers Association need you. These organizations represent Indiana soybean and corn farmers on critical and regulatory issues affecting their industry. Along with support from the national organizations, National Corn Growers Association and American Soybean Association, the Indiana members help determine public policy positions on critical issues, including farm bills, trade policy, and ethanol and biodiesel legislation. Become a member of Indiana Soybean Alliance membership, Indiana Corn Growers Association, or both. Visit incornandsoy.org to select a membership. That's incornandsoy.org.
At Indiana Farm Bureau, we serve tree farmers, goat farmers, and in fact, all farmers. With over 250,000 members, Indiana Farm Bureau represents a broad range of farmers and puts power in your collective voice. You also get advice from our subject matter experts, more affordable health plan options, and support for youth programs statewide. So whether you grow soybeans or strawberries, membership means you'll be heard. Become a member today at infb.org.
Welcome back to the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast from Hoosier Ag Today. Eric Pfeiffer here, and I'm with Don Lamb, Director of the Indiana State Department of Agriculture. And Don, You know, we have you here on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast, and, you know, largely ISDA is kind of a non-political organization. You've got a policy director. You've got policy that goes on. And a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about is, you know, programs within ISDA. You're not necessarily political stuff, but there is some policy that goes on within ISDA. But I think that farmers and other folks around the state are still interested in what we have to talk about, because ultimately everything that you do is influenced by policy, right? I mean, like,
right.
you've got to get your money from somewhere, and everything that you do, it's largely not a regulatory agency, which is a little bit different from other states' departments of agriculture, right?
Yeah, no, we're very different than most other states. And most of us would step back and look at it and say, well, we're really small compared to other states. And many other states have got many more employees, lots bigger budgets, and honestly, a lot of bureaucracy that goes with that. And I think there was some wisdom when this was set up in Indiana to keep us pretty fleet-footed, you know, and really that comes down to the fact that we don't have a lot of regulatory function. We have great relationships with the Board of Animal Health, with the Indiana Office of State Chemist, with Indiana Department of Environmental Management, with the Department of Natural Resources, with the Indiana Department of Health. All of those organizations have aspects of regulation that many times would be under the Department of Agriculture in other states. Now, it doesn't mean that we don't do a good job of regulating. It doesn't mean that we don't, stand up for our farmers, our producers in those regulations. It does mean that we get to be a little bit of the liaison, the in-between the regulatory function and the producers. And I just really appreciate the relationships that we get to have with those other agencies. It keeps us fleet-footed. It keeps us concentrating on things that we can do as pro-agriculture moves. And a lot of that would come back to what happens legislatively. And yes, we have a policy director. In reality, we work for the governor and the lieutenant governor. So we are really representing that level of government at that level. So, A, we appreciate the relationship we have with Farm Bureau and the commodity groups, because they're going to advocate for things that sometimes we may not be able to advocate for. Because if it's not a position of the governor, we will, we will take the side of the governor. So we rely on those organizations to really do the lobbying on behalf of agriculture. But then hopefully we do a good job of representing views, on more of a private level to the governor and lieutenant governor. Here's why this would be the way it is. And then hopefully they will support those views as well. And really we're the connection with that level of government.
And so let's talk about that level of government. We've heard a lot here lately about, how the cabinet is changing this, vertical versus horizontal. And I mean, it's just a different leadership style. When you really get down to it, I mean, everybody's got a different leadership style, and this is just a different way of doing it.
Yep. I think that's exactly the way to put it. I've not been disappointed in the leadership style of the Holcomb administration. In it though, I was a part of his cabinet. And I was part of something like 22 people. I'm not sure exactly what the number was. And we had regular meetings and I got to be there. In reality, when you have that many people in a cabinet, I didn't have a lot of interaction. I didn't have too many times when I was able to stand up and say, well, here's where agriculture is on this issue, because that's a big group of people. And so the way that Governor-elect Braun has set it up, it's narrower. It's eight cabinet members and then lieutenant governor and adjutant general and the state police. Those cabinet members, those eight especially, have got pretty long verticals underneath them, like you're saying, and several things that they're going to be responsible for. In a lot of ways, though, it almost makes the communication to the governor more direct because, as you say, it vertical versus horizontal, it really, I think, will be more of a working cabinet, more of a strategy cabinet. That's what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping as agriculture, we get opportunities now to say, okay, here's where we would really like to go. And I'd like to have regular meetings with the governor and lieutenant governor and really, work on those strategies.
And again, you know, the Secretary of Agriculture remains the Lieutenant Governor. It's a an interesting thing compared to some other states where the Lieutenant Governor is the Secretary of Agriculture. You are the director. That's not changing. Micah Beck, with the Lieutenant Governor elect, will be the Secretary of Agriculture. You know, in the line of hierarchy, that's kind of how it goes. And again, not a whole lot of that is going to change from ISDA's standpoint.
Yeah, no, by statute, that's the way it is. And he's got us and the Office of Community and Rural Affairs, so OCRA, underneath his purview. And in reality, that gives us a pretty direct line to that level between the Lieutenant Governor and the Governor, where I look at some of the other cabinet members even, and I think, you know, the Department of Commerce has several agencies underneath in that area now. So in some ways, agriculture would say, you know, we've got a pretty direct line because we're statutorily right underneath the Lieutenant Governor. We've got a pretty direct line with that communication. Then the key is just making that communication good. Let's have those regular meetings. Let's have some strategy time for agriculture, and let's really work on it. But I think there's some opportunities for this to work really well.
In your view, and again, we're not throwing anyone under the bus. So we're not trying to say, you know, this was bad before or anything, but you know, obviously, I think anyone who looks at any section of government, any section of their business, if they own one, we can all look at points that say, you know what, I'd love to see this improve. I'd love to see this. Is there any place where you'd be like, you know what, I'd really love to have better communication here? I think, and again, I'm gonna maybe get out over my skis here and say, I would think that maybe, as we've talked about, you know, perhaps economic development. Is there a way for agriculture and, say, you know, the IEDC, or is there an opportunity for better communication in those areas between the government agencies?
Oh yeah, there's always opportunities for improved communication, and I don't want to sound too political when I say this. You know, I really have appreciated the way it's been as far as the relationships we've been able to have. We've had some good relationships with IEDC. I've been involved in their pipeline meetings. I've been involved. Agriculture is more involved than what some people might think. You know, sometimes IEDC is viewed as only the development of manufacturing and all the bigger high level jobs, and agriculture maybe kind of gets left out. And in a way, there's some truth to that. But in reality, agriculture has always been more a piece of that puzzle than people on the outside might recognize. And there's some people within the IEDC that really did have focused on agriculture. But can we make it better? Oh yeah, we can definitely make it much better. And probably the biggest area there is the fact that agriculture doesn't fit into some of the criteria that IEDC might use for incentives. You know, a lot of what IEDC has done has been really big investments, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of investment, hundreds of jobs, real high wages, all those things, you know, go on a scorecard that allows them to have better incentives to bring the company into this state. And that has worked really, really well, obviously. But sometimes that doesn't work for ag companies. And sometimes a business that's going to create 30 jobs in a small community has a bigger impact on that community than a Honda plant would in a bigger community. You know, and so sometimes there needs to be a little different criteria for you know, maybe an agriculture business ought to have some incentives, some sort of encouragement to grow in a local area. And it may not be a real big dollar scale as far as the state's concerned, but to that local community, it's huge. And if that's a way to keep a few more young people employed and in your local community, and add to that economy in a local community, that's a good thing. So I don't know exactly what that looks like, but when you think about what we can talk about in the future, that's one of those things. How do we do that better? How do we help the small communities compete more on the economic development level than we've been able to in the past?
And I think that there are some legislators from some of those smaller communities that are kind of thinking the same thing. I'm guessing you've had some of those conversations.
Oh yeah. There's a lot of momentum for that right now. You know, just For example, things like childcare. I mean, just the fact that when you think about a small rural community having a high quality childcare system and what that means to that community, because if you don't have that, you can't have people going off to that high paying job, that good, so many times agricultural job, because it's hard to manage your family. Your family's going to come first. So those families will move to a bigger community where things like that are available. So, that's just one small piece of it. It's like, okay, if you're thinking about legislation, if you're thinking about ways to improve the quality of life in a small community in Indiana, that's a big piece of it. So what can we do legislatively that would help make childcare more affordable? And so that's just one example of, 100 of things that we hope to be able to communicate here with this new administration, think through, strategize on, actually come up with something that might work and make that part of legislation.
From a legislative standpoint, Don, with the legislative session coming up, is there anything that ISDA is getting involved in, anything that you have your eye on? Obviously the big thing this year is going to be property taxes. Farmers are all over this. I don't want to bring your personal stuff into this. I'm sure that there's an aspect from the personal farm that you've got invested in this, but from ISDA's standpoint, are you guys in on this fight?
We stay right in the middle of all those conversations, but that is where, like I say, the idiosyncrasies of how this works sometimes put us in a tricky spot, because as I said, we represent the governor and the lieutenant governor. So yes, we're involved in these fights, so to speak. But we also follow their lead. And so we really do, I get back to saying, we count on the other ag organizations to really carry those balls when it comes to that, to lobby for a certain thing but hopefully the governor will be on the side of that, the way that agriculture would look at it, and that we can be united in that. And that's when the strength really comes through, is when yes, as an ag community, we really want to see it this way, and we've been able to propose this idea of a way to reduce property taxes, let's say, and the governor agrees, or maybe it's not perfect, but we can kind of go down this way, and we can get behind something that makes sense. And that's when my job becomes a lot easier. And that's when my job is, as a Department of Agriculture, when we get to be, on the positive side of agricultural change and we're united with that executive branch, that's when it becomes powerful. And that's when it becomes really a strong thing for Indiana agriculture.
Is there anything that the Department of Agriculture needs that is going to be part of any legislation, or that you're asking for as part of any upcoming legislation?
Right. Well, we could dream a lot, and part of it is coming into a new administration, until we kind of get that direction of where, what way can we dream, how can we dream, if we're asked, we could have some good ideas. Really, I think anything to do with economic development and what that looks like is an area that we would like to have more influence. But you also get back to, like any business, sometimes you have to stop and say, what are we already doing that we just need to shore up and we need to do better? I would say, as an example of that, FFA, our Indiana FFA program, is super strong. It's great. It's been growing. We're over 14,500 students in FFA this year. It shows no sign of slowing down. It's such a good program. We've been doing it with the same staff for years now. And it's a little bit like what you get into with your discussions about with Purdue Extension and how we need to be able to do more, but our budget's been the same. And so in a small way, you might think, well, we'd like to have this grand vision for agriculture and where we might be able to go in the future to provide economic benefit. But also, we just need to shore up the things that we've always done very well. And the FFA program, you can put that into any category you want in the state. You want to talk about leadership development, you want to talk about soil conservation, you want to talk about economic development, you want to talk about farming in general. FFA has a role to play in all that. And so if we don't keep it strong, then we lose out in all those areas. And so, as a simple thing, I'd like a little more funding so that we can add a couple staff people to our state staff and be able to do that job even better as we grow.
Any other bills that you're already hearing about, or anything else as it relates to agriculture that you're just keeping an eye on at this point?
Yeah, well, everything right now is preliminary as far as that goes, and some drafts and some things like that. You know, there's some talk about bills that would encourage a retiring farmer to have some tax incentives if he were to help a young farmer get started. And I think that would, anything that would help that would be a really good thing for Indiana agriculture. The average age of the farmer keeps getting older. I think this year I actually am maybe 1 year older now than the average age of farmer in Indiana. I think it's 57. I'm 58 now. So, you know, when you think about that, we need to keep young farmers on the land, and we need to provide opportunities for people who haven't been farmers before to get into agriculture. And so that does, that has a role with maybe our Indiana Grown program, because a lot of times you'd get started producing something on a smaller scale and then work up. So that's part of it. And then, yeah, if there's some sort of incentive for a retiring farmer to pass his farm on down, whether it's renting it or selling it to a young farmer to get that person started, that would be great. So that's one thing. And then you do get back to some legislation on food availability type type issues where, again, like we were talking before, how can we incentivize local producers to get their food and local buyers of food to buy locally? What if there was an incentive for a grocery store to have locally grown produce in their store? That would help. So there's things like that we're hearing about and we're excited about.
Don, as we wrap up here, any final words? You know, again, I know your big message is always about Team Ag Indiana. You've mentioned the Farm Bureau folks, the corn, soy, yeah, pork, poultry. I mean, everybody. It really is, and I think it is unique. I hear from other farm broadcasters across the country, and I think there's a lot more like bickering amongst some of these groups in other states than what we have here. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm kind of on the inside and talk mm-hmm. with a lot of these folks pretty frequently. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Selfishly, I kind of wish we had a little bit more bickering. We just don't. We just don't. I kind of wish we yeah. did sometimes, just so I'd have a little bit yeah. more to report on. I don't think we do.
Right. Well, you know, I think you're exactly right. We are a special place here. And I think it's because we recognize that, you know, when there's less than 2% of us doing this, we have to be united. If we're divided, you know, we're just shooting ourselves in the foot. So, you know, we have to be united as we move forward with things because we're a small group to start with. And as it turns out, we've got a lot of people scattered across the leadership of these organizations. And I'll throw it back to the Ag Leadership Program. I would say that a very high percentage of those people have been through an Ag Leadership training class. And so we've got leaders across the state who are thinking about being unified, thinking about communicating well, thinking about synergy. And you've got a lot of people that don't care who gets the credit. You know, when we think about new, you know, we haven't talked about container shipping, and that could be something that happens in the next 4 to 5 years where we really change what our shipping looks like across our state, and maybe having a container shipment area in Burns Harbor. Well, if that happens, it's going to happen because everybody works together. It's going to happen because everybody plays a piece of something like that, and nobody can worry about who gets the credit for that. It's just Indiana agriculture helping to make it happen, working with the ports of Indiana. So that's one thing. And then I'll throw out something and say to you, as Hoosier Ag today, yeah, I'm sure, you know, it's sometimes more exciting if you have some controversy here and there, and I'm sure we'll give you some controversy at some point that you can report on. But I really appreciate Hoosier Ag today because in some ways you are part of Team Ag Indiana. You know, in fact, maybe you're one of the most important parts of Team Ag Indiana because you get the word out. We don't expect you to pull any punches if there's something that needs to be dug into a little bit. That's part of your job. But at the same time, you know, I think in general, the ag community appreciates knowing the fact that we've got a company, a group like yours that is positive for agriculture and gets agriculture messages out there to the public, because we are small. We need it. We need the positive communication, and you guys do a good job, and we just appreciate you for that.
Thank you, Don. I appreciate that very much. And we We're trying. You know, we love what we do, and we love the people that we work with too. People often forget we're not just a media company. We're an agribusiness as well. We kind of rely on farmers. When farmers are doing well, we're doing well. It's all circular. I mean, it's just we're an agribusiness too. We belong to the Agribusiness Council of Indiana. It's all just one big happy family here we're trying to be part of. Mm-hmm. So, Don, again, congratulations. We're very happy with the selection from the Braun Beckwith team to keep you in the role here with the Indiana State Department of Agriculture. We've had a great relationship with you and your team here for the past year and a half plus, and we hope to continue that relationship here for many years. And very, very happy to continue working with you. And I appreciate your time here this morning as we go through the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. And hope you have a very Merry Christmas and happy holiday season here. And appreciate all you do for Indiana farmers.
Well, Merry Christmas to you. We appreciate it. And we're ready to roll. Let's get 2025 going.
The Indiana Ag Policy Podcast has been brought to you by the Indiana Corn Growers Association and the Indiana Soybean Alliance, with support from Indiana Farm Bureau. Merry Christmas from Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.